Farzi Masugin here with you for another episode of Farzcast today. Appreciate you guys joining live on the Facebook page. And for those listening on the audio version, Apple, Spotify, wherever it is you download and listen to your podcast, greatly appreciate you guys. Just going to be me hosting today. Melody is off doing a lot of work, so she'll be around for the next podcast. But Melody wanted to be on, but wasn't able to. Has a lot of work going on. She said there's a Comic-Con event in Alaska. She's been telling me I got to go visit and hang out and all that good stuff, but that would have been a good reason to go. But nonetheless, this is, of course, a busy weekend with all the Chiefs draft stuff. So for those of you who want to check out all the Chiefs content, commentary, podcast, live streams, all that stuff, check out the Facebook and the YouTube pages. All of that stuff is on there, and we'll get back to more Chiefs talk later this week. For now, we're doing the Farzcast. I'm very excited for today's episode of Farzcast because this is someone who I wanted to bring on the podcast for quite some time and felt like this was really a really good chance to do so. He is the head coach of Benedictine Baseball. Very excited to bring him on, Eric Peterson. Eric, welcome into the podcast. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. And it was good to, you know, it's good to be back with you. What, we're going on 20 years since we first met?
I think 10 years.
Okay. It feels like it, but we got the same haircut now.
Yeah. I actually glad you brought that up because I was going to say how we met. It's actually kind of funny how that all happened because I was a student at KU and you were the director of baseball operations for the Jayhawks. And you already know this. Anytime I have like a baseball question, I always go to you, but I'm just not a big baseball guy. It's not a sport I watch a lot of. So when I was the when I was at KU, I was a beat football writer, and they needed a baseball writer. And right before Christmas break, the two editors, the sports editor and the assistant sports editor, they're like, "Hey, there are a lot of people who are applying for the baseball job, but we noticed you didn't." I'm like, "Yeah, man, I don't watch baseball. I don't know baseball. I can't talk any of that." They're like, "Yeah, we are probably gonna pick you." I'm like, why? Like, I didn't even apply for this. So long story short, I guess the writers that applied were not good. I don't know all the details, but they're like, "Yeah, you're the baseball writer." I'm like, "Okay, all right. I did not want this, but here we go. All right. Can't really say no." But anyway, I start covering the baseball team in February of 2013. And very early in the season, the end of the month, I think, February, there was a big snowstorm. I do recall this. Yeah. There was a lot of snow that year, to the point where you guys actually had to cancel your weekend homestand. But you guys were able to reschedule your set of games and go to Arkansas and play some other teams that had an open weekend as well, which was really cool. And I remember you liked my tweet. I'm like, "Who is this?" And I'm like, and I see your bio. It says director of baseball operations. I'm like, "Well, I should probably get to know that guy.
Probably hang out with that guy for a second."
Yeah. So we got to know each other from there. And man, you've done a lot with your life. Obviously, you've moved up in the coaching world professionally, but personally as well. You know, you have two kids. You got married since then. Congratulations on everything you've done. What have the last 10 years of your life been like for you?
Oh, wow. Well, you said this was going to last 30 to 45 minutes, not 3 to 4 hours. So, you know, we'll pare everything down. But let's go back to that snowstorm at KU when I was ops. Okay. So I got a great story for that.
Okay.
We had two of those big blowtorch heaters under a tent. Okay. And me and the managers and whoever else could help at the time were taking all the snow and putting it in a like deep right center, right? Yeah. Right kind of to the left of the scoreboard if you're looking at it, right at the scoreboard. And we melted so much snow so quickly that the drainage pipes underneath the turf were still frozen.
Oh, wow. Okay?
And so the water sat underneath the turf and just was like a waterbed. Okay. And so it just sat there and you could bounce on it. Right. I thought I screwed up $1 million turf field trying to get the snow off there. But eventually what happened is the drains underneath, you know, thawed and the water went out. And when that happened, the turf went flat and it stretched and it was perfect. Right. And then I think what we did is we found a place in Texas. And we found a turf field in Texas. And then I think we played Eastern Michigan down there, which the way the baseball world's athletic works is like, of course, they have a job opening. Okay.
Yeah.
This kind of gets into, okay, what have I done for the last 10 years? Right. They have a job opening. Okay. At Eastern Michigan for a pitching coach job. Okay. What happened was, is that their pitching coach left for a place called Wayne State. Okay. And I believe he's still there. Right. The recruiting coordinator left for a job at Drury. Long story short, okay, we were only there at Eastern Michigan for a year, okay, and then the pitching coach at Drury left, okay. So if the guy at Wayne State never leaves, I never get the Eastern job, okay, and then I never wind up back at Drury with the same guy, then I never wind up at Benedictine. Right. So you just connect the dots and you're like, wow. OK, so if that weekend series against Eastern Michigan gets canceled or we can't find a place, maybe this never happens. Right. And it's just baseball gods wanted that to happen and wanted me to sit out in right center field and melt a bunch of snow that weekend. So here we are. And I'm talking to you now.
That's odd. That's crazy. I did not know that. That's actually really crazy. Yeah, I've always believed, like, you know, crazy things like that sometimes, or even, you know, bad days, bad moments, you know, everything happens for a reason. And there you go. That's that obviously went your way. But like I said, you know, professionally and personally, you know, just the last 10 years of your life have been obviously you've just grown so much over the years. This is your was this your sixth year you just completed as a head coach?
Just finished our sixth at Benedictine. Yep.
What has that journey been like for you?
Oh, it's been great. It's been fantastic, and I've learned a lot of being a head coach and a first-time head coach, and, you know, there's things that you would obviously like to change or adjust and things that you want to keep the same, and really those are your foundational things that you truly believe in. But, man, we've seen a lot of things. We've gone to a regional for the first time in 15 years, or I guess it's 17 years now. You know, we've gone to conference tournaments. We've gone to the Dominican Republic as a team, did a mission trip. Like, there's a lot between day one and where we're sitting now, and a lot to be proud of too. So it's a great school to be at. We're always growing. It's just a good time to be at Benedictine.
Very cool. Very cool. By the way, go back to that baseball director of baseball operations, because I know a lot of people hear titles like that. Like, everyone can tell you head coach, assistant head coaches, all that stuff. But whenever you become the director of baseball ops, I think people hear that and maybe they have an idea of what that is, what that entails. Can you maybe elaborate? Like, I mean, I've got a good idea because of, you know, just talking to you and getting stories from you a little bit during my time covering KU baseball. But what does that job entail in total?
Yeah, I think it depends on where, you know, who you're working for and what program you're working at and, you know, what their needs are. I was very fortunate. I came back and I worked for Coach Rich Price, and I played for him from 02 to 04. So, you know, he let me kind of learn on the job. It was the first time they had it, and it's evolved into a full-time position now. But you know, my background's on the pitching side, so I was with Coach Graves and making sure he had everything he needed, but really I was serving everybody. And that was a great time for me because I got to learn a lot of roles, that I think prepared me for today. And I got to see Coach Price, you know, navigate a lot of things that were good, bad, different, things that a head coach have to do. So, you know, scheduling on the road, helping Marsha Bagby, who's, you know, the queen of everything. She's phenomenal, but, she taught me a lot of things that are inner working in the office, right? Where I was more involved with on the field type stuff and on the field development. I got to see, you know, how to fundraise, how to do the recruiting aspects from an internal piece. You know, I really became better at who I was as a coach by Coach Price allowing me to be there and learn on the job. And maybe not doing the fun things, but being okay with those things, right? And learning everything along the way. I tell Skip all the time, I stole all of his stuff. I don't know when I'm going to use it, but I took everything I possibly could from him and you know, Richie Price, Richie Jr., who I played with, and Coach Graves. There were a lot of good people there that, I got to take advantage of in my year there.
Whenever you tell people that you went to KU and that you coached there and all of that stuff, do you ever get questions of what was Bill Self like?
No, not really, because I think they were so separate, right?
Yeah.
But I was, you know, fortunate to be around Coach Self and some other really good coaches at the time. He is about as down to earth as you can get, right? And if you're wearing the Jayhawk, I'm wearing a different bird today. But if you're wearing the Jayhawk, like, he wants you to be successful, and if he can help you do that, or you know, just whatever, he's that kind of guy. He's in a pressure cooker, right? Like, yeah, he's in one of the most stressful jobs in America, and he makes you feel like you're the only one there that day. And you know, Coach Price was a lot like that too. He'd make you feel like you were the one guy that mattered that day. And you know, it's not surprising why both of them were really successful. So it was certainly when I got those times around him, I took advantage of him for sure.
You know, you mentioned Coach Rich Price, because I was curious for a while, you know, what he had been up to. He did retire. Do you remember what season was his last one?
So Fitz has been there for 2 years. So I think it's year. So 3 years ago, he finished up. So okay. I think Fitz is in year two. So 3 years ago when Skip retired.
Very cool. Yeah. Yeah. He was, I mean, you guys were all really nice to all of us in the student media. The thing that I liked about covering baseball is, you know, when you cover football or basketball, I mean, obviously it's like, you know, a lot of strict guidelines there. Whereas with baseball, they're very relaxed. In fact, I think, you know, baseball, football, soccer, they actually like welcome the attention because those sports don't get as much coverage. So it was kind of cool just being able to do that kind of thing there.
Yeah. And I think just talking to Coach Price, it was, you know, the one thing I remember, it was on the bus. Like, we were traveling somewhere when we first connected, and I went to Coach Price and I was like, hey, Skip, like, you know, this guy wanted to connect, and he's with the Kansas or the student union, you know, the reporters. And he's like, just be honest with them, but be gracious, you know, and, you know, represent the program the right way. And, you know, like, I'm about as loyal as you can get to Coach Price, but also to KU baseball and KU. And, you know, I was going to try to represent them the best way I knew how.
Yeah, no, I always appreciated that. And also Mike Cummings, who was the SID at the time, he moved on to the Royals. I don't know where. I don't think he's with the Royals anymore.
Nope. I actually talked to Mike, you know, not quite often, but every once in a while. He's over with Garmin. He's doing Garmin in Kansas City.
Nice.
Which is kind of crazy. I was able to help one of our former alums. I reached out to Mike and I was like, hey man, he's trying to get a job, he's got an interview, and Mike was able to help that out and make that forward, and now our alum's working at Garmin too. So
that's again, awesome.
This baseball world, man, it's a small world, and it's about the relationships that you can build and then maintain.
It is 100%. I did work for the Royals for a few years, part of their game day production event operations. Yeah,
right. Yeah. You used to play the music.
I did that for a little bit, then, you know, they introduced me to another position, running the video board and the LED board. So I did like three different things every awesome. Different games. So I ran into Mike a few times, so that was good to see. But I did want to that's a perfect segue right there to talk about you know, your connection with Mike, and you mentioning, you know, how small the world is. I looked at your profile over on the on Benedictine Baseball's website. It says, over the past five seasons, the program has seen 100% graduation rate for those who have exhausted eligibility and 100% job placement rate for those who graduated with a degree at Benedictine during that time period. What is that like as a coach to be able to have that kind of success rate for them to graduate, for them to find work afterwards? Because as much as everyone would love to play pro baseball, you got to have that backup plan. And obviously all of them have had that. What is that like to be able to have that kind of success rate for you?
Well, that's our foundation. That's what the school's built on, is forward, always forward. And, you know, what's the next thing and what's the most important thing? And we talk about that in the recruiting process when we sit down with families and what are our pillars that we're focused on, and it's academics, community, and baseball. And we're pretty stubborn. We're not willing to kind of move off of that. And, you know, you could add 16 more guys to that list this year that, you know, 17 graduated, one's going into med school. You know, so it's it's who we are and it's who we recruit and, you know, what we make important within our program, and that it's the four and the 40. What are we doing as a community every day in and out with our guys that over the course of 4 years, we set them up for success over the next 40. We kind of expect you to get a degree from Benedictine. We celebrate it, right? But that's an expectation here. And the next step is that when we're walking across the stage with the degree on our hand, we're also walking across the stage with a job in the other hand. Really, we just got to find out where we're going to live and when we're moving, right? And who we're living with. So, you know, we want to make sure that when our guys leave here, they're set up for success. They're not searching for it. And I think that that's one thing that the college does a really good job with. Athletics department puts an emphasis in, and then it trickles down to all the teams and the and what the head coaches and assistant coaches and, like I said, the community is doing to make sure these guys are set up for success in the next 40.
You know what I kind of realized just hearing you say those kinds of things? A lot of times with college athletes, you know, a lot of them do get in trouble when you hear about it with football and basketball players. I don't know how often you personally have dealt with that kind of thing, but I feel like in baseball, because it's an everyday sport, you're probably too busy and don't really have time to get in trouble, if that makes any sense. You know, it's kind of a good way to just kind of keep your nose clean and stay focused with your academics. And then when you're not studying or in class, you got to be doing baseball stuff. Sure. Do you deal with a lot of trouble off the baseball?
Not here, man. I think it really starts with who we recruit and how, you know, where they come from, the background, and their parents, and what the importance they put on being a good human being, and you know, what kind of character kids we were recruiting, and you know, do they fit the Benedictine way? Are they mission fit? Are they looking to do the same things that we're looking to do? Is it a great addition? You know, those are the things that we talk about as a coaching staff. Like, we want to make sure they fit and we fit them at the same time. But, you know, we have, I think there's 17 engineers. We have biomed. We have all kinds of kids that, like you said, they don't have a whole lot of time. And like, you know, and so they go to class, they lift and they work out and they come to practice and we play. And then they take Mondays off and they need it, you know? And so, I think that we have a lot of focused kids on what they're trying to accomplish, and, the extracurricular activities are really not a part of what they're doing and what they want to, again, accomplish in the 4 years that they're here. You know, and they have a lot of peers around them that have the same goals, that are very similar mission fit kids.
On your profile, it also mentions, and I know we've been talking a lot about the school's mission and what it's about and everything. It mentions that from 2018 through 2023, I guess you can add 2024 to that list out now, the program has participated in more than 3,000 hours of community engagement or service. Some of the businesses out there, Sleep in Heavenly Place, High Five Fridays, KC Marathon, Youth Baseball Camp, several others. What is it like when you get with these organizations and try to connect with the community out there?
Yeah, it's, you know, 6 years of this, like, it's pretty easy to connect with it because they know we're out there, right? And, you know, I think when we first started, we have groups called battalion leaders, and there's six or seven of these groups within our team that are in charge of finding certain things to go and do and be a part of our community. We talk a lot about the closed fist theory, right? Like, everything that we want to hold on to, we got to let go of to get the things that we really want. And the most important thing for us is our time that we can give to the people that really need it. And then we're well supported on the back end. That's not the reason we do it, but, you know, we want to be a part of something bigger than ourselves, right? And be able to grow as people and, you know, and really experience things and help people out along the way. I kind of circle back when we went to the first time I went to the Dominican Republic was when I was director of baseball ops for KU. And, you know, that was the first time I met Dayton Moore. And went down to the academies that were down there, served, did some the sugarcane villages and kind of the same places that we took our team this Christmas. And it was one of our goals to do that when I got here. We had two seniors that really wanted this to be a part of their legacy here, Matthew Gephardt and Dom Cizanka. There's two really, really good people that wanted to do something bigger, right, with their time at Benedictine. And so we've spent about a year planning and fundraising and working with the community to get donations. We took over 30, 50-pound bags of the Dominican Republic and left equipment down there. Spent almost 7 days just serving the sugarcane villages and the orphanages and just being relentless about being bigger than ourselves. And it was life-changing. You know, and one of the conversations that I've had with some of those guys that went was they almost feel guilty, right? And they're returning back in our facilities and campus, and everything that we have is pretty amazing, right? And we're pretty privileged people. And one of the things that they just felt bad that we're able to have all of this stuff, and we just left people that have nothing, right? And one of the things I told them is, like, it's not about feeling bad, it's about feeling appreciative, right? But also knowing that we made an impact, right? But also realizing what kind of impact they made on us, right? And we may have made a 1% impact when we were down there a week, but they changed the 45 guys that went down there. Like, we have different mindsets. We have a different vision of what we're trying to be, especially at Benedictine, and when we move on from here, what kind of people we're going to be.
What is the recruiting process like when you're looking at baseball players, or maybe you're looking at junior college players that want to get to a bigger school? Because you're coaching your team, and then you're trying to recruit as well. How much time does that take up? What is that process like, to the best that you can share?
Sure. Yeah, it's, you know, we're basically all 4 year. We're all high school. We have one transfer on our team. And he checked all the boxes, right? He wanted to be an engineer. His transfer classes transferred, you know, all of those things that make it a challenge for us to recruit a transfer, a D1 kickback or a JUCO guy, is also fits when we recruit the high school kid, right? And it starts out with their academics. That's got to be number one. It's got to fit within the model of the college and for them to be successful within our program, but academically over a course of 4 years, right? So some of the big degrees that we have are architecture, engineering. We have pre-med. We're getting a new medical school on campus by 26. And then obviously you got your general studies. So you got your business degrees, your finances degrees, your nursing degrees. So we can kind of spread out and who we're looking for, but really we kind of stand out too, right? We're a little bit different, maybe a lot different from the schools that are at our level athletically, right? We're the homegrown kid, right? And I think a lot of kids right now, and especially in the tail end of COVID, are looking for a place where they can call home for 4 years, and then have a realistic shot of being academically successful, being successful in the community, and then being good in on the baseball field, right? And then how do you combine all those? So when we personally go through the recruiting process, we try to identify those early, right? And say, okay, this kid fits our mission. It fits what our profile is as a school and as a program, as an athletic department, that they have the same ideals as we do, right? And then we go see if they can play baseball, right? And that's the big part of it. And a challenge for us is that when we do go 4 year and we're going the high school kid, we're on the junior class right now. So we got to be really good at identifying a kid. Okay, this is what he looks like now. But what is he going to look like in 2 years? Right? What is he going to look like when he gets with Coach Sparks in the strength and conditioning, and he gets bigger, faster, and stronger, and there's a development piece there? Okay, what does he look like as a junior in college, right? Can that kid now help us and try to win games for us then? So that's the most challenging part. And then we're recruiting within a gas tank, right? So you're talking about with the area states, everything that's touching us, we try to get to. And really the main reason we do that is we can get to them and then we can see eyes on them. But then the parents and the kids can get to us without having to stop. right? And fill up the gas or stop somewhere halfway along the way. So most of our kids come within a gas tank because we can put eyes on them and then they can get to campus. Our retention rate is over 95%. Once the kids get here on a visit, I think our success rate at committing those kids, it's over 90%, right? So I think there's a whole process of that. But we identify, okay, go see, get them on campus, offer, commit, right? And so just in a nutshell, that's kind of how we start and finish our recruiting process each class.
I do want to share this tweet you had. I know you post a lot of things about recruiting, baseball, character, all those things, and we've obviously touched on some of those things, but you tweeted something in 2018. I think this was right around, I think this was your first year with Benedicting. Yeah. Here you are, you know, praising a player for how good of a game they had. But then you emphasize something that has nothing to do with their level of play. You say that he was the only one after the game picking up cups, bottles, and trash in their dugout. And then in capital letters, you say, "We see everything." Yeah. So for those who may not know, if you would, explain to us and elaborate, why is that kind of thing very important for a coach and a scout? Why is that such a big deal?
Well, I mean, one, we got to live with these people. Like, I see our kids and our recruiting staff, our coaching staff, our support staff more than I see my own family, right? And when we start that recruiting process with the young man and his family, I want to know that over the next 4 years, we can live in cohesive with these. They have the same ideas. They want the exact same things that we want within our program. And then that allows us to go teach baseball, right? If I have to teach being a great person, this thing's not going to work, right? And I'm going to spend a lot more time talking to you about ideals and talking to you about what we want to become as a person than what we want to become as a baseball player. And then eventually it won't work, right? Because we're fighting two different things. But if we can just spend a little extra time looking at the things that may not seem important, but are vital into building the culture that we want, especially within our program, but in our community of Benedictine and Atchison. You talked about earlier, like sending kids out in our community. Well, they're representing this weird looking bird, right? And we want to make sure that the kids that we bring, the families we bring onto our campus, into our community, into our program, are the exact kids that we want to send out, right? That are now wearing our gear, right? And you know, if I could watch a kid just 5-10 minutes longer, stick around and see what he does in the dugout, how he treats his teammates, how he treats his coaches, how he treats his mom, right? And dad, is he carrying his own stuff, right? And it's the whole, you know, drinking out of the water hose instead of the water bottle. But, you know, really, what kind of person are we recruiting is the most important question I think we have to ask ourselves as a Benedictine baseball staff.
Are you aware of the student? Did you, first of all, what was the backstory? Was this a high school game? What was the backstory to this?
Yeah, it was a high school game. I don't know where he's at today. I'm not gonna call him out, but I don't know where he's at today. I know we didn't get him, which was one of those things that it was tough because I think he would have been a great fit, especially early when we were starting to build this thing and what our foundation wanted to look like. I think he would have been a model of that. I hope he went on, played somewhere really cool and had a great career. And but really it was a summer ball game. It was hot. It was miserable. Probably one of those games where it was like the fifth or sixth game of the day that I was watching. And I just happened to stay around long enough and watch the kid. And maybe I was trying to meet him afterwards, but he was the only one in there. And you know, he was the guy picking up, and it was pretty special to watch.
That's really cool. I remember, and I was a student at KU at the time when the story came out. I remember Michael Sam when he was coming out of Mizzou, the defensive end there, getting ready for the NFL draft. The story about his sexuality came out, and that was a huge deal to the media and to the fans. But there are a lot of NFL scouts that already knew this. And I go back to the reason I bring that up, what you said in your tweet, we know or we see everything. I mean, you guys talk to these guys, you guys ask a lot of questions. I mean, scouts and coaches, they really do their due diligence more than they think. And I go back to that Michael Sam story, and it kind of made me realize, I'm like, wow, they really know the person, the athlete, more than they might know themselves. I mean, I say that facetiously, but it kind of is true in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's important. It's like, think about you dating somebody, right? Like, you really want to know who those people are before you spend too much time with them. And then you find out, I don't want to be with that person, right? And it didn't fit. And, you know, it's hard work, but it's work that, you know, if you're good at it, and you want to build the team that you think will be successful, then you'll take the time at it. There's also filters too, like relationships with high school coaches are vital. The relationship with the summer league and prospect league teams, like those are really vital, right? And to find out who those guys are, and they shoot you straight, you're straight with them, you find out a lot about the kids and a lot about the parents. And then again, you're going to spend 4 years with these people. I think it's appropriate for them to find out about you too, and make sure that it fits on their end, and it fits on our end, and we got a chance to make this thing work.
I know at, when I was at Johnson County Community College and at KU, a lot of times you would see like an advisor or somebody from the athletics department making sure that kids are in classes. They check in with them at the hallways. And then if you watch certain shows like Last Chance U, I know that's more centered around JUCO kids. They're always class checking them, grade checking them, all that stuff. How much are you involved with your student athletes and making sure, you know, their grades are in order, they're attending class? How much of that do you get involved with that?
Yeah, 100%. We have to. That's our first pillar. That's the academic pillar. It's expected to graduate here. It's expected to be successful. A lot of that is personal success, right? Like sometimes we talk about, you know, team GPAs, right? Well, that may not have anything to do with Johnny, but it has a lot to do with the team as a whole. Okay, so we're hyper focused on each individual success. Guys check in with me or their battalion leader every Sunday. I get navigate reports where their grades are, what they're doing, things that they need to get help with. Are they missing class? We have the Student Success Center that they can go and see and reach out to. And, you know, our athletic director and his wife are part of the Student Success Center. And that's one of the positives. And that's one of the great things about working in a place like Benedictine is everybody wants our guys and our student athletes to be successful, right? And sometimes when you get into a bigger school, not saying they don't want their guys successful or their student athletes successful, but I mean, my number at KU was 029525, right? Like, I remember my number. I don't know that anybody remembered my name, right? And when you come to a school like Benedictine, everybody's going to know your name. They're going to know if you're being successful or you need help, right? They're here to help you. And again, they're part of the community that wants to see you succeed in the next 40. So yeah, it's a big deal academically and how you're doing and what you're struggling with or what you're doing well in.
I remember when I was a student at Johnson County, there was a classmate. She was a softball player. And I guess she was going to miss a game miss a class due to games. And our professor, you know, he was an economics professor. He taught at Johnson County and KU. And she was trying to work things out with the professor. And then the professor, I don't even remember his exact response. And she says, well, I don't have a choice because of the schedule of the games. And the coach goes, you do have a choice. And this is all happening in front of the class, which was right. Kind of awkward. But how easy are professors to work with, whether at Benedictine, KU, Drury, wherever you've been at, in terms of trying to work with the students if they're going to miss any class time due to games like road games and whatnot?
Sure. I mean, I'll start out with KU because they miss a lot more class and a lot more academic opportunities than would say at Benedictine. Like, most of our games are on Saturday, Sunday. We have very little midweek games. So us missing class can be it's not as much of a challenge as maybe, you know, we're leaving a Wednesday night flying out for a series of Texas, right? Like, that's a whole nother bag of issues, right? Yeah. But what the supports program has, you know, Glenn Glenn Quick was somebody I worked with at KU, even when I was going to school there. And you could go to the Success Center there, the Academic Center there, which is phenomenal, right? And they have tutors that they have people that will fly with you and travel with you. And, you know, we're talking Power Five there, right? So it was that those advantages are there for student athletes to be successful because they know of the challenges of travel and playing that are a little bit different than maybe, say, at a Drury or an at Benedictine, right? But I think it depends on each program. How much are we going to take advantage of the things that the school provides? How proactive are we going to be with letting our professors know? So if we're missing a Friday, I'll try to get a travel roster out by Monday. Right. So yeah. When they go to class on a Wednesday, they can talk to their professors or they can make up, you know, if they have a test, we're going to make that test up early. Right. But we're going to work hand in hand with our academic professors and the Student Success Center to make sure our guys are taken care of.
Eric Peterson joining us here, college coach from Benedictine. What is your coaching philosophy? I know we've kind of talked a lot about character, but whenever it comes to trying to be successful, you know, on the diamond, what do you try to do to try to have the best team possible and to try to win your games?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it comes down to having guys that are bought into what we're trying to do. And focused in on, you know, one pitch at a time and not being overwhelmed by stuff that we can't control, right? And that's very difficult in a game that's very uncontrollable, right? And a lot of things that happen to us in a challenging game, right? I think it's the other two aspects that bleed into being successful in the game, right? Are you accountable? Are you somebody that is willing to be unselfish and do the things that it takes to win a baseball game, right? And so we try to do those things in the other two categories, in academics and community. We try to teach the game through those, right? That tough times are going to happen. Are we going to be tougher than those times, right? And so we challenge our guys within the practice of the fall schedule of really, okay, these are the moments that are going to be tough. How are we going to respond, right? Our foundation is TLC, and trust, love, and communication. There are three things that are very difficult to accomplish, very difficult to do on a daily basis because they're all individual, right? And we're trying to do those within a scenario of a group setting. When those things, you know, I may have a guy that has an engineering class, a final or a test that I can't even spell the name to the class, you know, and he's focused on that, and it's taken away from what his focus is maybe on the baseball field. And we got a lot of those guys, right, that are dealing with other things off the field that we're trying to help them, you know, really phone in and be as good as they possibly can beyond the field. So you asked what our philosophy is. It's going to be based around the TLC model and what we can do to help our guys get in the right position and be successful on the field and off the field.
I got a crazy question for you. Have you ever been ejected from a game?
Yeah, I have. My first year, okay, I'm at Baker, right, and we're losing big. It's like 8-3 or something in the last inning. And there's a check swing, you know, it was whatever. And so I go out to make a change. We're making just put in some guys that don't get a lot of time. And I said, "Are you sure on that check swing?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, I just need you to be a little better. And then tossed me. And like I said it in that tone, I wasn't loud about it. I wasn't trying to get tossed. Like, apparently those are the magic words. And so I've kept those in my back pocket in case I need to, but that was the only time, my first year and about halfway through the season. And, I don't know that I've been close since. I probably should have been a couple times, but, you know, that was the one and only time, my friend.
There was a gal who I dated for a little bit. She was a softball player and she was also an assistant coach. I can't remember for which college, I don't remember which one, but she was a pitcher, and I just asked her straight up. I'm like, "Have you ever intentionally hit a pitcher?" She's like, "Oh yeah, of course." I'm like, "So I'll ask you the same thing. Have you ever been in a situation where you've done that?"
Well, I certainly haven't called for it as a coach. That you know, I want to make sure that that's out there. I don't call for stuff like that. But when I pitch, maybe Maybe yeah. so. They're on the plate a little bit, or they hit a couple home runs, and I felt like I couldn't get them out, so they might as well be hurt a little bit when they're standing in first base.
Well, I'll never forget the year the Royals won the World Series, and I'm sure you remember this, Brett Lawrie, when he slid into Alcides Escobar. That entire weekend was just like, man, they're hitting him, going for his head, midsection. I'm like, Jesus. Like, and it was Kelvin Herrera, who, you know, throws the ball 100 sometimes.
Yep. That's, you know, you never want to throw it in anybody's, you know, upper portion of their head or anything like that. But, you know, what I remember the most out of those years is how tight and how protective they were of each other.
Yeah.
And you, like, I think you see a little bit of that with this group of Royals. And I think you'll start to see a little bit more when there's going to be a moment within a season that you can tell how tight your group is, right? And how much they're willing to protect each other. And that's not earned in the season. That's earned way before, right? Yeah. And how close are your group? So I'll give this, okay? I know you're not, you say you're not a baseball guy, but you don't give yourself enough credit, okay? But I think, and this is just my like vision of the Royals to now and to last year, but one of the things that I've noticed the most out of this year, right? And so I would say the Royals' difference between last year and this year is their starting pitching or their pitching, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they keep the group in the game. They keep them, give them the chance to win, right? Well, not one time did I ever hear or see the Royals' pitching staff when they came off. They all were in one group, right? And they were talking about the previous outing, or they were talking about their outing that they just got done with. But you watch them now, and they come off the field, and they know they're done with their outing. They may go in the clubhouse for a short while, but they come back and they're back in a group, right? And that starting staff is in one part of the dugout, and you can tell that they're together, right? And when you play 162 games, it's up and down, right? And how flat can you get that, right? And stay steady. Well, when you got five guys that you can count on every time you walk off the mound, that's a huge part of being successful, right? And I see that starting to happen with the Royals. And so when they went on that 3 or 4 game skid, well, now they're 7-10, right? And they're back on it. And they're winning games like, what did they score, 8 or 9 in the ninth last night? Like, those are the little things that when you talk about culture, when you talk about how we want to build our program, is that we want our guys to fight for each other. We want our guys, when the adversity strikes, they've earned enough behind the scenes that they can right the ship together, right? And they know that it's not just going to be one guy or two guys. It's going to be the whole thing. So I kind of go back to your original question of, you know, what are we building, or what's our philosophy? It's that, right? It's the inner group that we're trying to develop within the frame of the teamwork that leads us to as far as we go. And it's going to be your teammates, and it's going to be your leaders on the team.
What are your thoughts on the Royals with the whole stadium vote being turned down and wanting to go downtown and maybe like the River Market area? Have you followed that story at all?
Yeah, sure. And just being a baseball guy myself, like I think it makes sense to separate each other from football and baseball. Yeah. I think those are two different things, like two different, the Chiefs need and want something different than the Royals need and want something, right? I'm a huge proponent of downtown baseball and probably just lost 2,000 followers, and so cool, whatever. but I think if you've been to enough downtown baseball ballparks, it feels different. Right. And when you have to play 81 games and you're going to a ballpark, you want it to feel different. And especially for the families that maybe can only afford to go once. Right. And that's their vacation of the summer. I like Kauffman. I think there's a lot of other things that people could be doing. You're going to a parking lot. Right. In a beautiful stadium in a parking lot. If you put it downtown, maybe you go to dinner, maybe you make a night, maybe you make a day, a couple of days at it.
Yeah.
And it becomes an experience. Right. And so I think the idea of going downtown is great. I think the process of giving what I was voting on, but, you know, giving what the people of Jackson County were trying to vote on, there was a lot of unknowns. And so I think it's fair for them to ask the question, like, what are we really voting on here? And where is it going to go? And how's it going to help us? And I think that when those details get figured out, I think the ballpark eventually goes downtown. And I think the people rally around it and really get behind a good product, right? I think them winning right now is a great thing, right? If you have to rally around something that's tough to watch, I think getting people to vote and spend their money on that is difficult. And so I wish the Royals the best of luck, because it only helps them get to what they want to get and get to where they want to be.
Yeah, I think the logistics were just very... You know, that was just a big unknown. No one really knew exactly, as you said, no one wasn't really sure what exactly it is we're voting on. And hopefully they can have that clarity. And then, yeah, you're right. You know, a lot of people were saying, you know, why would we want to vote for a team that's been historically bad for a long time? But if they can, figure it out, start winning, I think, they can definitely make that happen. A few more minutes left here with Eric Peterson. By the way, to go back to the ejection thing, because I was listening to A10. I can't remember if I was listening or if I was like interning in person hearing that story. I think I might have been there when the story was told, but I remember one of the hosts was talking about parents getting ejected at games, like Little League games, and another co-host was like shocked to hear that, and I was kind of shocked too. I'm like, I didn't know parents ever got ejected. I don't know if you saw this. I think it was the Yankees. Somebody in the stands was like shouting at the ump, and the ump thought it was the manager, so he just tossed him, and he's trying to explain himself, and the ump's like, nope, I don't give a damn.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard to non-eject somebody. I mean, you already did it. He's already gone.
You're unejected.
Oh, sorry. I'll pull that one back. I don't think that flies in Major League Baseball. I wondered, the question I had, though, what I don't know is, when a manager gets ejected, is there internal fines, right? Is there fines from Major League Baseball, right? Like a player would be ejected or a fine in football, right?
Yeah.
Or a penalty. Like, that's one of the questions I need to ask my big league guys. Maybe Kai Carrera with the Indians would know. But, that's where I could see if I'm a manager and I get tossed for something I didn't do, I'd get hot. I'd be hot, reaching into my pocketbook and I didn't do anything. Right. So it was certainly interested because I'm a Red Sox guy at heart. So it didn't hurt my feelings at all that Boone got tossed, and especially when he didn't earn it. But I think there is something to, we got to start, I think it was Scherzer, but start ranking umpires and start scaling them and where they're at and how good they do. So there is some accountability for the guys that run the game.
This will make you laugh as a Red Sox fan. So I know, like, over the years at baseball stadiums, when they do kiss cam, I don't think they do it every single game, but like once they do, you know, 5, 6, 7, however many they have time left for, they'll put like two players of the opposing team. Sometimes, you know, the players will just have fun with it. They'll pretend they're making out or whatever. And then I was not working that night, but I remember hearing about it the next day at work. But I guess they put two Yankees players on the video board for kiss cam. Yeah. And apparently they were very, very angry about it. And then the next day, my boss was I was working the next day. My boss was supposed to address it at work. He completely forgot in our pregame meeting. And as soon as we start kiss cam, he goes, oh, no, anyone who puts two players of the opposing team will be fired on the spot. We're all like, whoa. And I didn't even know what happened. So I'm just like, did something happen? What happened? So,
yeah,
that's the thing.
Some of those big leaguers are sensitive, man, and they don't like the kiss cam. So
one thing we used to do, whenever an infielder just messed up on a pop fly, we would show like three different replays of it, which I'll admit is kind of excessive. And then what was the movie of the baseball movie where the kid's just staring at the pop fly and it hits him right in the face? He's like not even moving or doing anything. We show that clip and everyone in the stadium laughs, which is awesome. Dayton Moore was not happy about that. And this was like, because the idea was, in 2015 is that we were winning more at the time. So I guess we want to try to, you know, just be classy
raise,
about it. Which
raise the standard of yeah, up a little bit.
I can completely understand that, but that's kind of funny. Yeah.
I can see that. I'm close with Dayton, and he's a very nonsense, straight to the bell baseball man.
Yeah. Right?
And so I can see that. I can definitely see that.
Yeah, I've heard him speak a few times at KAB, which is the Kansas Association of Broadcasters. They have an event at Kauffman every year. I think they have it around this time every year, too. And he takes questions from those who are in student media. Super, super nice guy. And I ran into him a couple times just working for the Royals. And he's always been nice to everyone around him. So I understood why he was let go, but I was also at the same time just being around him a few times was sad to hear that. Yeah. Well, your playing career, I know nothing about your playing career. I know did you play at Pittsburgh State?
Yeah, so I finished up there. I started under Coach Price at KU. So I was there
from
02 to 04, and then my dad was sick and passed away in the spring of 04. So I spent a short time at Johnson County Community College and then finished up at Pittsburgh State and got my master's degree there. It was a great place. The Pitt State was a perfect place for me, both academically, community, in a baseball fit. And, you know, it was one of those places that I'm glad I went to KU because I met so many different people. Yeah. You know, this kind of touches on recruiting, but really, honestly, if I was to go back and I had True Serum and somebody was like, this is the place for you. I probably should have went to Pitt State out of high school and, you know, did better academically my freshman year. Right.
Yeah.
You know, and really been on a better path academically than I was. But ultimately I got there and had a great experience. Got my master's degree and started my coaching career and haven't looked back since.
Who was the coach at Johnson County when you played?
Kent Shelley. Yeah.
Nice.
Kent Shelley was there. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So Kent was there and my uncle was the athletic director, Carl Heinrich, who played.
Carl Heinrich's your uncle?
Yeah.
What?
Carl Heinrich's my uncle.
Yeah. Dude, this is a small world.
It is a small world. And John Hadel's a first cousin. So I call him Uncle Hadel and Uncle John and God rest his soul. But KU was in my blood, man. It was the only place I wanted to go and got an opportunity to do so. And it was the best opportunity of my life besides, you know, coming back to being director of baseball operations again for Skip. And, you know, I met my wife, moved into a duplex. She was my best friend in high school, by the way.
Nice.
And so college took off and I came back and she lived on the other side of the duplex. And so I was like, I looked up and I was like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing here. And so ever since, here we go. Here we are.
Very cool. You mentioned your wife. I know mentioned your kids a little earlier. You did say, you know, with your recruiting and all these things, you know, you spend more time around your players, coaching staff, all those people than you do your family. What is it like whenever you get to step away from baseball, not worry about that, and just be around your family, especially during the time, during the season, because I know you probably don't get much time with them during the year.
Yeah, I have to reintroduce myself and to everybody at the house, you know, and hey, I'm back, I'm here. Yeah. But you know what, one of the things that my wife, bless her heart, she's a ER nurse at Children's Mercy in downtown Kansas City. And she provides an unreal amount of perspective for me. You know, we live in Lawrence, so I get an hour of drive time. I get a window time and I get to think about, you know, her and the job that she has to do. And she's worried about saving lives. So I'm worried about winning games. And so there's just a whole lot of perspective there that when I get home and it's a tough day at the office, it's nowhere near what she's dealing with and the kind of impact that she does at her job and, you know, the kind of reach that she has to people that are all kinds of backgrounds, right, that need all kinds of help. So I get perspective when I pull in the driveway. But then I also get the 8-year-old that says, hey dad, that was a rough game today. And I was like, yeah, it was, but you know what? We're going to survive. We're developing great young men and these guys are going to go on to do great things. And, you know, just to bounce back, the type of people and the type of families that we're recruiting, I want my son to see. I want my son to be around, both of them, obviously, to be around those guys and say, okay, I want to be like that guy. Not play like him. I want to be like him. And I think that's the big difference in recruiting of the kind of kids that we want at Benedict and to be around our families.
You mentioned Carl Heinrich, your uncle. He was always very nice to me when I was doing so. I'm still kind of surprised by that.
Yeah,
Because I mentioned Last Chance U. I saw him on there because I don't know what is he doing now, by the way.
So when he retired from Johnson County, he became the Jayhawk commissioner.
That's right. Right.
And so he had to deal with the Last Chance U stuff. We'll keep a lot of that information private.
Okay, fair enough.
But the conversations him and I had were definitely interesting, of the background information and the background things that he had to deal with as the commissioner. Jeff Sims was the football coach at Fort Scott Community College.
Yeah.
My first job, baseball job ever, besides being a GA at Pitt State, was at Fort Scott Community College, and he was the football coach there. And I learned a lot from Jeff Sims and crew, just by being around that environment. It was certainly interesting. But the Last Chance U stuff, he was at Garden. And then what was happening at Independence, made it for good television for sure.
Listen, I've had Jason on the podcast. He doesn't like me anymore because I guess I had some strong opinions about one of his former players on the Chiefs. But and I don't know what that guy's problem is. Like, he's always going after Patrick Mahomes. Like, dude, the guy wins a lot. But anyway, we'll leave that for another time. Yeah,
that's another podcast. And once again, we can lose some more followers and go from there.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. Please tell Carl I said hi and hope he's doing well. I was surprised to see him when he was on Last Chance U for that little bit there, so that was really cool to see him there.
Yeah, so he's retired now. He's got a bunch of grandkids, and they're selling their house. They got a lake. He's living the life. He's doing good. He's living a great life, and he has a great family. He's good. He's doing really good.
Good. Yeah, he was essentially my boss for a little bit because they needed a PA announcer because I guess the guy they had was gone for several games. So I did it for their men's and women's basketball games and also for the baseball team, which, it was a lot of fun, good money to do. The toughest part is when the opposing team, Johnson County was always like, straight in order, did everything right. Yeah. The opposing team would pinch hit a guy and he didn't have a jersey on. Yeah. He'd like no number. I'm like, I don't know what to say. I can't announce this kid. Like,
nothing. You just don't.
I didn't say a single word.
JUCO baseball, man. Gotta love it.
Eric, I know you do a lot of stuff on social media talking about the program and just baseball, recruiting, coaching in general. If people want to learn more about you and learn more about the program, how can they connect with you on social media?
Yeah, Eric Peterson at 713. That's where you can get a lot of our content. We're just trying to get out there. We're just trying to inform people of what our kids are doing great and their successes and what the program's doing. So, you could go to mine, Eric Peterson 713, and then you can on X or Twitter or whatever we're calling that these days.
Yeah,
we're on Instagram and we're on Facebook. So you can find us on the three big ones. Haven't figured out TikTok yet. I don't know that I may not need to.
That's a good point.
I may not need to. But we're out there, and really it's to celebrate our guys. It's to celebrate our alumni. All of those that came before us that are with us and are coming after us. It's to grow the program and grow the profile. So if you're interested, come check us out. Come join our fandom, and we'd love to welcome you.
Yeah. I've tried to keep in touch with Benedictine's records over the years, just to see how you're doing, the team's doing. But when I looked at the schedule, I didn't realize, how close some of your games are in the Kansas City area where I live, essentially. Yeah. So you guys play MNU. I know you guys play Park. I did a couple games for Park as well. Where else do you play in the KC area?
Yeah, so we're in the heart of American Conference. I believe it's one of the best conferences in the country, maybe the top three conferences, especially athletics-wise, but certainly baseball-wise. And but the local schools that you may recognize are going to be Baker, Mid-America, Park, and then us. So those are okay. Kind of the Kansas City area schools. And then we reach out to Central Methodist, Peru State, Graceland. We got 14 teams now. So, but it's a really challenging conference, with a lot of coaches that, work hard at their craft and want to be really good at what they do. And again, like the challenging part is we're not like them, right? We're all homegrown. We're going to grow our own. We're going to develop our own. We're going to be all high school kids. So when you come out to watch us play, we may look a little baby-faced at times. That's because we're playing freshmen, right? And that may or may not be a recruiting pitch. Just throwing that out there. So if there's high school guys that want to go the four-year route that are looking at maybe something at our level, this would be a great place to come and check us out.
Yeah, I definitely need to come to one of your games, either at MNU in Olathe or up there in Park, for sure. One last thing I will say to wrap up here, final point I'll make is the biggest thing I've learned from you, and I've been really bad at this, and whenever I talk to someone about, you know, not being able to keep in touch with people and how I need to be better about that, they're like, yeah, man, I need to do the same thing. You're always, you know, shooting me a text on my birthday, Christmas, or like I remember I've had surgery a couple of times. You've always been like one of the very few people who've like reached out, those kinds of things. And I'm sure, you know, with personal experience, you know, I'm sure that's something that you've learned over the years to do. I've always tried to be better about that with people. Like I've got a couple friends who are dealing with something, so I'm trying to be there for them. Just keep that communication going and just, you know, trying to keep in touch with people in general, because I haven't really been the best at that kind of thing. So sure. I've always appreciated you doing that, because I've learned from you to do that kind of thing, because I do think it's important to keep in touch with people who have done a lot for you, been close to you, whatnot, because that is important.
Yeah. I live by two rules, the 48-hour rule. So if somebody reaches out, any way of communication, we try to get back to them in 48 hours, because if it's important them to reach out, then it needs to be important us to respond, right? And then the second one is, if I think about you, I'm going to reach out to you, right? So for some reason your name comes across my mind, or there's some reason that I think about you in that moment, I'm not going to go too far without reaching out to somebody, because I don't know, it's just a part of me, and maybe it's something bigger than me saying, hey man, you need to reach out to this person, and maybe they don't need anything, or maybe it was the right timing. So you know, I really find a lot of joy in that, and making sure that you know, even the people maybe I haven't talked to in a while, like they know that I still think about them and I care about them. We do that with players all the time. Like either they're playing with us or not playing with us anymore. They gave up a part of their life for us, and I want to make sure that they know I'm still there for them.
I did lie. I did want to share one last thing actually before we get out of here, okay. Because you and I, we talk, keep it in touch, during, like Chiefs games, every now and then, every single person who I interact with during games, everyone was just like down, including me during that Super Bowl. You were the only one that was like optimistic, telling me we're good, we're going to be fine. Just wanted to, you see this on your screen, by the way, right?
This is
our text conversation. You're on the left, I'm on the right, freaking out and trying to stay positive. you were positive the entire time. So you said, we just need to win by one, and that's exactly what we did. Well, not exactly by one, but you get the idea.
Yeah. Hey, we have Patrick Mahomes. I don't know if you know that guy.
Yeah.
He may be pretty good. As long as he's on the field and he's got a chance to win, I think we're okay.
Eric, like I said, we've kept in touch through text over the years, but we've never like done anything like this. I'm definitely going to make an effort to come out to one of the games next year so we can meet up in person either before or after a game. Thank you so much for your generosity, your time coming on this podcast. Hopefully we can do it again down the road someday.
Let's do it. Thank you. I appreciate you. Much love. Let me know if you ever need anything.
All right, Coach, thank you so much. You take care of yourself and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Eric. That is Coach Eric Peterson, the coach for Benedictine Baseball. Go check out his stuff. Go check out the team. A lot of great stuff talking about coaching philosophy, recruiting, all of that stuff. So big thanks to Eric for his time here. Appreciate all of you guys who tuned in, downloaded, and listened to the episode, whether live on the Facebook page or on the Apple, Spotify versions. Big thanks to all of you guys. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up here. I'm out. Talk to you guys later. Take care.